Hello everyone. Today we're going to be talking about Michael Oakeshott, quite an influential conservative thinker who attempted to defend tradition, inherited wisdom, and he was an opponent of rationalism. I've already mentioned him a couple of times when I talked about Maurice Cowling a couple of weeks back. I think he hovers in the background of Peter Hitchens's basic worldview. And he gives a very different defense of tradition from some of the other thinkers that we've considered, like Julius Evola, for example, whose version of capital T tradition is somewhat different from what Oakeshott has in mind. So without wasting any further time, let's get on to it. I will mention right here at the top that my summer sale is ongoing up until the end of July. Promo code Scorcher gets you 25% off all courses. Buy it now. But with all of that said, let's make a start. So modern politics, according to Oakeshott, is dominated by rationalism. That is the conviction that political problems yield to abstract principles, technical rules, and ideological blueprints. Oakeshott regarded this as the characteristic error of the modern age. It was shared across the political spectrum, in his view, by liberals of every kind, from John Stuart Mill on, by socialists of every kind, from Karl Marx on, or even from Jean-Jacques Rousseau on, and many who called themselves conservatives. No doubt Oakeshott had in mind certain libertarians who like to proceed from axiomatic first principles, the Ludwig von Mises's of this world. And Oakeshott really had it in for all of these various different kinds of rationalism because, in his view, they can't fully grasp a certain type of knowledge that is really underappreciated by intellectuals in society. So these two kinds of knowledge for Oakeshott, it's the difference between technical knowledge that can be learnt in a manual, right, that can be transmitted through text and written down, okay, and kind of learnt almost like doing an exam that you would do at university or at school, and practical knowledge that develops through habit, through tradition, and through lived experience. Now, in this country, in Britain, this is the difference between the university wit, the university educated intellectual, okay, in the science laboratory there, at whatever institution, and the archetypical man in the shed tinkering about. The man in the shed. And Oakeshott is the big defender of the man in the shed tinkering about, developing a kind of feel, a kind of experience of the field, because in ways that he can't even write down and describe, he has kind of worked out through his lived experience, what works. All right, what works can't always be written down in a textbook. If you don't believe this, just go to any work. Just think of any line of work that you've been in and think about the difference between theory and practice. Book smarts and actual experience. And, you know, when proverbial you-know-what hits the fan, you can bet your bottom dollar that most people will look for those men and women of experience who've been there and done it, who know what to do, before they look to those people who have the book smarts. Rationalism makes the fateful error of privileging the explicit and the teachable while dismissing as mere prejudice the wisdom that can only be lived. For Oakeshott, practice precedes theory. the real skill in any human activity, whether it be cooking or statecraft or craftsmanship, flows from tradition and from cultivated habit, and only then, after that, from abstract theory. Okay, this is, I mean, cooking is a pretty good example. I've talked before on this channel about Marco Pierre White. Marco Pierre White had literally tens of thousands of hours operating as a top chef, working in a real kitchen, developing his craft over many, many years. Now, he can write down a recipe, and I can copy the recipe, and I can watch his video, and I can copy exactly what he does. But you understand the difference between Marco Pierre White and me trying to copy his recipe. Okay? Rationalists mistakenly believe that a sufficiently rigorous blueprint can replace or fully direct practice. And speaking of Marco Pierre White, if you watch any of his Maestro videos here on YouTube, he talks about the sorts of things that you won't really see written down in the recipe, or you can't really kind of write it down as a test. He talks about, you know, the feel for the pan, where you position it, you know, there are things that you can only pick up if you've been there and done it. And this is an intangible thing. You know, recently the World Cup has been on here, and they talk about the importance of experience, about having players who have been there and done it and know how to deal with the pressure as against, you know, the person who has the right technical stats. Okay, they have the right, maybe on paper this is a very good team, or this is on paper this is a very, very good player, but there are certain intangibles, okay, in something like the world of sport, okay, that give that provide that little edge, or provide that differential, okay, that is difficult to quantify. And this is what Oakeshott really was interested in first and foremost. For Oakeshott, all of this gets things precisely backwards. That is, if you think you're going to put theory before practice, you are putting the cart before the horse. Practical knowledge is always richer and always prior to its theoretical foundation. This is something that Matt Ridley has talked about in his books, somewhat influenced by Oakeshott, where a lot of the time the engineers come first. A lot of the time the tinkerers and the people who get there through trial and error get there first, and the academics, all they're doing is coming along afterwards and simply observing and writing down, okay, what has already been proven in practice. So the theory comes second and the practice comes first. But intellectuals everywhere get this the wrong way around. And this is what Oakeshott is talking about. So, in the rationalist view, politics is an engineering project. It is a set of problems to be identified and solved by clever institutional design applied with confidence and clarity. I'm just going to get myself out of the way a minute. This is the blueprint logic. They impose an ideal plan upon society from above, and they use intimation to draw out possibilities already present in practice. And this is the rationalist view of the world, and social planners of every kind have some version of this view. Against this, Oakeshott posits politics as a kind of conversation, the ongoing pursuit of intimations already latent within an existing tradition, a process of refinement and evolution. For Oakeshott, the real test is reality itself, as against the abstract principle. Has it stood the test of time? Lots of the time, the blueprint, especially, I mean, I talked in the Peter Hitchens video about liberal reforms to crime, where they put completely untested theories, okay, into policy, which then had disastrous results. Thomas Sowell also talked about this as well. Oakeshott is saying, like, look, this is because these things are untested. You have replaced something that has grown organically through the trial and error of thousands of people, millions of people tinkering about with one abstract plan, which one person has come up with that can't possibly stand the test of reality. And then Oakeshott says, you know, yes, there's scope for reform from within, but we must also preserve continuity with the past and not kind of change things too quickly. You can tell this is how Oakeshott was a conservative as opposed to radical. He did believe in this kind of gradualist change, in that kind of Burkean tradition or the Russell Kirk tradition. Oakeshott was this kind of conservative where he was always seeking continuities with the past, but he did see, you know, scope for gradual change as long as those changes stand the test of reality. You know, do they work? That's the ultimate test. There's an empirical test. And if it doesn't work, then you need to go back to the drawing board. And ideally, the new thing should come about as a result of the tinkering, not as a result of somebody trying to impose a plan from above. Oakeshott defends tradition. He says tradition is blind prejudice. That is, you continue doing practices because they've always been done. This, however, is the accumulated, tested wisdom of an entire society, providing the very background within which rational criticism can meaningfully occur. No tradition can be fully reduced to explicit propositions. It carries within it a dense inheritance of practices, assumptions, and adjustments that have survived the test of their use. To discard all of this inheritance as arbitrary or as superstitious impoverishes society. And this is something for which the leftist typically has no feel for. Most leftists just think of the past as being kind of the stuff of nonsense, that, you know, it's just bigoted. It's just kind of these things existed for no reason, or it was merely oppressive. Oakeshott says, no, many of these things have a reason for being there. And this is a version of Chesterton's fence, of course, where, you know, you come across a fence, you don't know why it's there. And the radical or the reformer or the, you know, the rationalist thinks, well, I can't see a reason for it being there. Let's knock it down. Whereas the traditionalist says, well, probably that has got a good reason for being there. We don't know why it's there. Let's just trust that people knew what they were doing at some point. So let's not knock it down. And Oakeshott very much stands on that side of the fence. He says that, you know, familiarity breeds contempt, and the rationalist has a disdain for that which is habitual and the inherited. You know, anything that's passed down, anything that he can't see the reason for, the rationalist, because he doesn't understand it himself, has a problem with. Forgive my cough, by the way. I thought it had gone, but it's somehow come back over the course of this lecture. So, yes, this directly leads to destructive political projects, because the rationalist is, you know, continually doing away with things that he doesn't understand and causing a lot more damage in the process. Rejecting tradition as irrational, the rationalist attempts to remake society according to abstract principles often with results that are rigidly dogmatic, socially disruptive, and ultimately catastrophic. Ideology, without the inherited wisdom that he's talking about, of accumulated knowledge, is destructive. It demolishes. You don't actually know what you're playing with, and you end up doing more harm than good. This is the ultimate message of Oakeshott. He contrasts the civil association with the enterprise association. In the civil association, the government is a custodian of general, non-purposive rules. Individuals pursue their own ends, and they respect, and the government respects their freedom. And it respects the fact that all of the, you know, thousands and millions of people tinkering about in their sheds and doing whatever else may be developing practices on their own because they know what they're doing. Right? The local fishermen understand the waters in which he's fishing. The administrator who's come in from Whitehall doesn't understand any of those things. This also gets us back to F.A. Hayek's knowledge problem that I discussed in the Thomas Sowell video a few weeks back, the local knowledge of that fisherman or of the guy who runs the harbour or of the lighthouse keeper, for example. It's so presumptive of the outsider from the capital city with his rationalist assumptions to assume that he knows better. And this is seen in every organization where the managers who get their university degrees and their fancy MBAs and so on come in and they've got their ideas about how everything's supposed to work because they've read it in this book and they've read it in that book and their managerial guides tell them this and that. And then they rub up against the local workforce who actually understand how the factory works or how the organization works or how this industry actually functions. And they may have very good reasons for that. There's always that tension between those two forms of knowledge, Oakeshott very much in the latter camp. The Enterprise Association is very much the managerial one, where the government is the manager of a collective project with a shared substantive goal. This, according to Oakeshott, tends towards totalitarianism. The distinction here among is among Oakeshott's most enduring contribution. Civil association leaves room for a plurality of purposes. The state sets the rules while leaving individuals free to choose their own destinations. Enterprise associations subordinate individuals to a common goal, and in so doing, tend inevitably towards coercion. And many people in Britain will have in mind things like common purpose and various other Fabian and clandestine Blairite plans to direct society ever more centrally, or various directives that come down from government or head office, or, you know, we're doing this sort of drive or that sort of drive. And so often those things end up doing more harm than good. One of the things I can think of is, quote unquote, sustainability. Okay, sustainability. The idea that the central manager, that Ed Miliband, for example, would have a better idea of quote-unquote sustainability than fishermen and farmers and people who've, you know, been working the land for generations, you know, should at the very least make you a little bit skeptical. How could anybody have the faith that Ed Miliband, who doesn't know his ass from his elbow, right, can't even eat a bacon sandwich, let alone till a field, could actually be in a position to tell that farmer who's been on that land for 200 years, 300 years, 500 years, you know, teaching your grandmother to suck eggs. You hear that phrase? Well, I mean, but this is what the Ed Miliband of this world do again and again and again. And when people push back on them and say, actually, Ed, you don't have any clue what you're doing, his tendency is to double down and become ever more vigilant, ever more dictatorial, ever more tyrannical, and to, you know, be like, right, well, if you're not going to take 10, I'm going to force you to do it using the arm of the law, using the government, using various, you know, instruments of coercion. And this is how British government has gone, certainly since Oakeshott's time. He saw it coming in his own lifetime, and it's only exacerbated and got worse. Same is true pretty much of every Western nation. Genuine political understanding, according to Oakeshott, cannot be acquired by mastering an ideological doctrine or reading a technical manual. It comes from immersion in the practices, history, and institutions of a society. Politics is an art learned through participation and inherited through the culture. It is also a science derived from first principles. So Oakeshott, you know, again, if you go back to the lecture on Cowling, where Cowling talked about the historian almost as a detective, almost as somebody who needs to immerse himself in the materials of his subject to get a feel for it. Oakeshott is all about these things that are hard to put into words, things that, you know, you can intuit your way through, that you can, you know, again, it's hard to, you get a feel for it, okay? It cannot just be learnt through book smarts. That is something that Oakeshott said, you know, that so many of the intellectual types, the managerial types, struggle with because they're of a rationalist mindset. But and just because they can't understand it, and just because it can't be written down in a test, right, just because you can't get a degree from it, doesn't mean it doesn't have value. But the rationalist doesn't understand that, and so he seeks to discard it wherever he finds it. The rationalist has a certain illusion of certainty, of which Oakeshott was a sharp critic. Political life, according to Oakeshott, is contingent. It is inherently uncertain, shaped by history and circumstance, with no final solutions available. You know, a little bit like the Sowell saying of no solutions, only trade-offs. Comprehensive planning fails. You know, no plan survives contact with reality, first contact with reality. Attempts to eliminate uncertainty produce rigidity, unintended consequences, and institutional destruction. Ideological purity is a corrupting force. The quest for the perfect and for perfect consistency in politics is a symptom of the rationalist disease. What Oakeshott is saying is that so many things are situational. You have to be able to react in real time. In a way, this is what Carl Schmitt was saying about decisionism, about power always in some sense being decisionist. You can't actually have a law for every eventuality. Sometimes you've got to think on your feet. Sometimes experience and intuition are much more valuable than what it says in the manual. And this is, I guess, the difference between real wisdom, accumulated experience and wisdom, and the book smarts that Oakeshott has such contempt for. Oakeshott wanted a politics of skepticism and restraint. His final counsel is a conservatism of temper rather than doctrine, focused on keeping the ship of state afloat and preserving a course towards continuity. Continuity, moderation, and careful preservation of the complex inheritance that we all owe to our forefathers and our ancestors These are much wiser guides than the grand schemes of improvement. The politics of skepticism asks how we sustain what is worth keeping. Now, there are some criticisms, I think, to make of Oakeshott, which is that there is much wisdom and truth in a lot of the things that Oakeshott had to say, okay? And he's been influential for a reason. However, this kind of quiet conservatism, which is today alive and well in people like Danny Kruger from Reform UK, is kind of genteel British, you know, it's a little bit of the Roger Scruton tea with the vicar conservatism, okay, is that in its counselling of restraint and moderation, and in its general acceptance of kind of gradual change, many now argue in 2026 that people like Oakeshott didn't go far enough in resisting. I mean, this was in some way Cowling's big issue, you know, with conservatism in general, that they didn't take the fight to the liberals and the socialists hard enough, that they, you know, because their opponents were ideological and rigid, and because this kind of feel your way through, respect the traditions type of conservatism, it's kind of soft in a way, that they ended up not actually defending the things that Oakeshott said, you know, were sacred or important to a society. So therefore, they ended up giving away that society to the radicals. This is, I guess, one of the big critiques of conservatism per se that many younger men on the right today have a problem with, because they look back at Oakeshott and at Edmund Burke and at Roger Scruton and they say, well, what did you end up actually preserving? You gave away the house, Oakeshott. You didn't, your ideas didn't go far enough. You didn't fight hard enough. This was too genteel. Now, I don't know whether that is fair, okay? People can let me know in the comments, if you're a big Oakeshott defender, maybe you can outline the ways in which this type of conservatism actually did put up the fight. But this is the great danger, of course, that if this kind of conservatism is found ultimately to, you know, be a weak opposition or to give way to genuinely radical forces on the left, then it kind of provokes an equal and opposite reaction on the other side. And therefore you end up with two rather rigid ideological forces going at it, you know, working from the very sorts of rationalisms that Oakeshott, opposed in his lifetime. I don't actually know what the answer to all of that is. Oakeshott has the, you know, like so many conservatives in history, I'm reminded of the title of Samuel T. Francis's book, Beautiful Losers. Maybe Francis is somebody I'll, you know, do a video on down the line, but Oakeshott, like Peter Hitchens, and so many of these other, like Thomas Sowell in many ways, is a beautiful loser. He was correct. He had the habit of being right in all the things that he said. But he came out on the losing side. So the question then is, by his own empirical test, right? He said the test is of reality. Right? You test it by experience all the time. Well, we have had quite a lot of experience of Oakeshottian conservatism at this point. And the experience is that it gets steamrolled by the radical left. It gets steamrolled by the forces of counterculture. Arguably, you could argue in America and increasingly in this country as well, is not only soft to its left, but it's soft to its right as well. That it kind of it doesn't resist the margins as well as it used to, and therefore experience is finding it wanting. So the great challenge for conservatives now, right? The great challenge for Danny Kruger and Scrutonian conservatives and Burkean conservatives and Oakeshottians in the current moment in 2026, if you're watching this and you're one of those conservatives, as thousands of you will be, your great challenge is how do you answer that charge that your very approach has been found wanting, that you have just been nothing but a straight loser for 100 and plus years at this point, nothing but a straight line of L's for your brand of conservatism against these more radical forces. It's not enough to be right. You have to be able to take the fight to them. Do you struggle to take the fight to them because your set of ideas, as articulated by Oakeshott here, ultimately struggles to be nailed down, right? It's like pinning down. It's because he's talking about things that cannot be written down in a textbook, are not, you know, they are in some ways intangible. Okay, it means they're vulnerable. And what the challenge for those conservatives is, how can you protect those things that you think are so sacred, that you think are so important, okay, without then yourself succumbing to the very traps that Oakeshott is talking about? Another question to ask is, are human beings cut out for that? Maybe there's a rationalist drive. I mean, Vilfredo Pareto said human beings are non-rational, but they have a tendency, a bias towards thinking they are rational. And maybe human beings need to believe that they're being rational, in which case that means writing down, you know, some of those principles. However, when conservatives have tried to write down those principles, it ends up being awful. I remember Jordan Peterson's Conservative Manifesto that I reviewed on this channel, line by line, one of the worst written documents I have ever reviewed, I've ever read, right? And I'm not trying to have a go at Jordan Peterson, but it was really bad. You know, maybe it can't be written down. Maybe that's part of the whole problem. The trouble is, as the years go on, okay, and more of these traditions and more of the old way of life is eroded and taken over and smashed by the forces of radicalism, how much longer can the Oakeshotts of this world occupy the space that says this is the opponent, this is the relic, this is the remnant, this is the vanguard of the society against these forces? Its failure to do that, I would say, has led to the rise of populism. It has led to the rise of the radical right. It has led to the rise of, you know, so-called, you know, radicalized young men and whatever else scare stories you read in the press. A lot of the responsibility lies with the inheritors of Oakeshott, and maybe even with Oakeshott himself. Maybe there's something not quite right in the conservative philosophy. I don't know the answers to all of that. I'm being a little bit more critical in this lecture than I have been in some of the others, because it's very prescient to know. Anyway, that's Michael Oakeshott in a nutshell. Buy a course at the academic agency. Promo code Scorcher gets you 25% off. That's a tradition I've been building up for many years now, the summer sale. And I'll see you all next time.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.